All right, so we are beginning the third chapter today of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Perek Shlishi Mishnah Aleph. We'll send the pictures of the papers momentarily. So the first Mishnah of the third chapter almost really could belong to the other chapter because it's really like a standalone Mishnah about a continuation of the process of sanctifying the new month. And then the rest of the Masechet from here until the end is going to deal with the laws of the shofar, which is unique to Rosh Hashanah, and the prayers of Rosh Hashanah, the special tefillot and amidah that we do from Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. That's going to take us till the end of the tractate of the Masechet. So Mishnah Aleph reads, Ra'uhu bet din v'chol Yisrael. Let's say all the Supreme Court, they saw the court, they saw the new moon, v'chol Yisrael. Everybody else saw it. Meaning it's obvious to everybody that the new moon is here and that there's going to be a Rosh Chodesh. But nihkeru ha'edim, the witnesses come and Beit Din are questioning them, but they may have come very late in the day and the Beit Din are going through the formalities of asking them. All of a sudden, before they actually have an opportunity to officially sanctify the month, lo hispiku lomar mikudash, they were unable to say the ceremony that we talked about in the last chapter, mikudash, it's sanctified, and have the people answer back. And it already became dark, sunset.
Because the people were testifying.
The people came, they testified, they were asking questions. And, right, the process, the process of doing, of going through the motions, right? Even though it was something that was clear as day to everybody that they had heard, that they had seen the new moon.
Right.
But in the course of all of the chaos and the coming and the testing and the questioning, they wanted to sanctify and it already passed, the day finished. So now the question becomes, so what do we do? On the one hand, everybody saw it. The Edim were accepted. They came before. Okay, so we didn't get to formally say Mekudash, but everybody knew it was sanctified. On the other hand, they didn't get to say it until afterwards. Halacha is, Hareze Me'ubad. You cannot sanctify the month based on that. You have to push it another day. In other words, what the Mishnah is teaching us is that the official ceremony of the court to declare Mekudash is where the month is established. The fact that we went through all of the steps before that doesn't change the fact. If you don't officially sanctify it, it's not officially sanctified.
You mentioned a few days ago that they did conditional sacrifices in case somebody would come along the day.
I believe that that's one answer that the Tosafot brings.
So I'm wondering, do they only do that when the calculations could only be possible, or do they do that on every 29th or 30th, you know what I'm saying?
The calculations make it that it was impossible to see it on the 29th,
right,
would they give the conditional sacrifices?
Would they still do it on the 30th?
It's a good question. I don't have a 100% answer for you, but logically I would say no, because chances are if the calculations are impossible,
right,
as we've already seen, then the witnesses will be discredited if they end up coming, because the rabbis will know how to ask them questions and challenge them on their testimony, because there's no way they could have seen what they had saw, right?
Okay.
So we saw that played
sense.
A tremendous role.
Curious.
Right. Okay, so that's the first principle of the Mishnah. You must sanctify it officially through the court. Ra'uhu bet din bilvad. Let's say only the court were the ones who were able to see, based on the trajectory, based on the clouds, whatever it was. Only the bet din, this court themselves, saw the new moon. So what is a court? The court is three people. So what happens? Ya'amdu shnayim v'ya'idu bifnehim. They can appoint two people on the next day. Two of the Beit Din people come and testify in front of the rest of the Beit Din. There may be others. Ve'yomru mekudash mekudash. They say it is sanctified, it is sanctified. And that's the end of it, right? So what this is teaching us is that the court themselves are able to sanctify the new month.
Right.
They don't always have to wait for outside witnesses to do it. The court themselves can do it, in fact. Now, the last case is an interesting one. Ra'u shlosha vehen Beit Din. Let's say only three people saw the new moon, and they themselves are the court. They're the Beit Din themselves. So now what do they do? You need two. You have a problem. It would seem that you would
Wasn't
need...
Wasn't that just the case?
No, the case before was the whole court saw it. There were many, many people.
Okay.
So they have two witnesses and they have the court.
Okay.
The issue that we now have is, it seems as though you need a minimum of five people...
Sitting on the bench.
You need five people in total to do Kiddush HaChodesh. You need two witnesses and three judges.
Okay.
That's the minimum.
Okay.
You need five people. The problem here is we only have three.
Yeah.
You have the three of the Beit Din, and they themselves are also the witnesses who saw it. So how are we going to do this now? Because now...
You need to find another two people.
We need to find another two. Exactly. So what does the Mishnah say? Ya'amdu ha-shnayim, the two out of the three people of the Beit Din who saw the new moon, they should stand as the witnesses. Ve'yoshivu mehavrehim, they should take from their friends to be part of the Beit Din. Etzel ha-yahid, next to the other guy who saw it. Ve'ya'idu bifnehim, and they should teach in front of them, they should testify in front of them. Ve'yomru mekudash mekudash, they should say it is sanctified. She'en hayachid ne'eman al yede atzmo, because an individual is not believed on his own accord, right? In other words, he cannot establish the new moon by himself.
That they allow them to be edim on this matter.
The Beit Din themselves? Yeah. Why?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand that there's no advantage to saying yes or no, because they have the information, they have the keys. So now, in other words, they can't be challenged. Number one, you can't challenge the Beit Din. They have the map on the wall.
Right.
They know all the things as to what. So now, also in your mind, when you know something is possible, when you know what you're supposed to be, you have the
You're saying
the
you could trick yourself into thinking what you're not seeing.
A little bit.
I hear that. So you're saying they could be, I don't want to use the word impartial, but they could be a little bit biased based on their own calculations.
Because they have the calculation that thing is supposed to
and
look
like. So they
like
want
that.
It to be that way. Well, they're still going to have to go through the process of questioning them and really
the
asking them.
They got the answers to the test.
I hear you. This is getting us more and more away from the testimony and closer to calculations. Is basically what you're saying. I agree. It makes almost the testimony part of it a formality.
I guess that's why he's coming and tell you that they can.
Right. Well, you could think not. You know? Right. You could think not. So basically, they create this situation. The three seed, the two of the guys, they testify. They bring two other people to sit on the Beit Din. A couple of just details that we learn from here is that A, the Beit Din themselves can sanctify them, can testify and sanctify. Another thing the Mishnah mentions is you cannot have a Beit Din, a court, who establishes the month with one person. In other words, if you had three people who saw, you can't take the two people to testify in front of the one other person and the one other person establishes it. That doesn't constitute a court. A Beit Din has to be a minimum of three people in order to be able to have the strength or power to be able to testify. Even if that one person is what we call a mumhe. He's a expert and professional in the topic, and you don't really need the other two people. The other two people are basically a couple of guys they pulled off the street. Okay, hey, you two, come stand over here. Right? You say, so what's the point of them? In the end of the day, it's still important. You still have to have the Beit Din of three. Hence why you'll see also, just to go back to something practical, when we do like the Hatarat Nedarim in Rosh Hashanah, you'll always see three people there, because that's the minimum amount of people for establish a Beit Din, a legal body, which can undo or set things or establish any kinds of laws or things like that. Okay, so there's a couple of ins and outs that we learn, the officiality of the ceremony, and that really closes our discussion about the concept of Kiddush HaChodesh. Okay. So let's move to, I think we have a couple minutes maybe to just do some of the things regarding Shofar, the laws of Shofar. So Shofar is obviously the main mitzvah of the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. We blow the Shofar for various different reasons. And so now the Mishnayot are going to detail to us which Shofarot you could use, what's the shape of the Shofar, the sounds, how we blow it, all of the different ins and outs. Says the Mishnah, Kol ha-shofarot kesherim. All of the kinds of Shofarot, any kind of horn, which is hollow on the inside, right? Which means to say that it's a you have the Shofar, and then there's a bone inside, right? Because the animal's horn is a bone. But you could remove the bone. The bone comes out easily, right? Not easily, but you have to pull it out. And that will then create a hollow, type of horn. That's our shofar, yeah.
There's something inside?
When it's on the animal's head, there's a bone inside. It doesn't come hollow like that. There's a bone inside.
Yeah, they hollow it out.
And they hollow it out by removing the bone. Some kinds of animal horns, though, are not a bone. There's not an ability to detach.
Hollow.
No, it's not only not hollow. Even after you sever it from the animal's head, it's impossible to hollow out what's on the inside. It's not like it's two pieces, a horn and then the bone, and you remove the bone and now you have a hollow trumpet, a hollow horn. It's all bone. The whole thing is just one bone. So those kinds of horns are not usable. They're not called a shofar. So that's just one thing. But the Mishnah tells us any shofar, any horn which can be removed, the bone from the inside, and creates a hollow inside, kesherim, they're kosher to be used. It can come from any animal except chutz mishel para. It cannot come from a bull or cow. That it cannot come from. Mipineshehu keren, because that is not called a shofar in the words of the Torah. It is called a keren. It is called a horn. And so there's a technicality over here. We want something which is called a shofar, not something which is called, excuse me, a keren. Okay? The Gemara over here offers another interpretation as to why we don't want to use the horn of a bull or a cow, because those animals remind us of Cheta Egil, of the sin of the golden calf, which is a stain on the mark of the Jewish people. So on a day like Rosh Hashanah, where we're asking for a positive judgment, we're coming in front of Hashem for atonement for sins, to then use a prop or an item which reminds God of that terrible sin is not something that we want to do. So two reasons which are brought down. The Mishnah's reason, though, is because of the technicality. It's not called a shofar, it's called a keren, a horn. Amar Rabbi Yosei argued, he said, V'halo kol ha-shofarot nikre'u keren. All of the shofarot are also called the keren. Shene'ema, the pasuk says, bimshoch bekeren hayovel, when there is an elongating of the horn of the yovel. That pasuk is written in Yehoshua, where he blew the trumpet, and there was an elongating of the trumpet to signal to the Jewish people that they should circle the city of Yericho, that they were fighting a battle against the people of Yericho. They were circling, and they were blowing the shofar as the people were circling. And in that context, the shofar is called a keren. So Rabbi Yosef disagrees with Tanakama. Tanakama said you can't use the horn of the cow or the bull, because it's called a keren, it's not called a shofar. Rabbi Yosef says, wait a minute, all of your shofarot that you're allowing are also called a keren in the book of Yehoshua when he talks about blowing the shofar by Yericho. So why are you making a distinction? The rabbis in the Mishnah don't answer. They just leave it open. So there seems to be a bit of an argument. The Gemara fills in with a beraita that the rabbis responded to Rabbi Yosef by saying, wait a minute, Rabbi Yosef, you're right that all of the shofarot are called a keren. They're also called the horn. The problem is all shofarot are called both. They're called a shofar and a keren. The horn of the cow or the bull is only called a keren. It's not also called a shofar. And so that was their justification for excluding that kind of horn from shofar versus the other kinds of horns which were called shofar and a keren.
Are they visible? There's a visible difference?
No, not so much.
So how would somebody know?
You have to buy it from a reputable source. You have to investigate. It's possible. Again, I'm not a connoisseur, right, so I don't know. But it's very possible that people could. I mean, there's clearly a difference depending on the animal, right? If you we did a shofar workshop when the kids came over here before Rosh Hashanah, you could definitely see that different animals have different horns, right? Some are more curvy, some are straight, some are different colors. There are different lengths. So there's definitely differences. So you can use some of those markers to tell the difference. I don't have the ability to look at two shofarot and say this came from a bull and this came from something else. But there are markers to be able to tell. But you also do your own kind of investigation. So this tells us what animals are able to be used for the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. The next couple of mishnayot are going to talk about. The next mishnah, I should say, is also going to talk about. Excuse me, he's going to also talk about the shape and the physical look. So we'll leave that for that. All right?
Beautiful.
Sounds good.
Thank you so
Have
much.
A great day.
And you speak.